through 8. Now you all know that I don't preach on prophecy all the time, and I don't even preach on it much of the time, but I get on a binge every now and then, and maybe I'm on a binge now because these things have been on my mind a lot of late. And how could you help but have them on your mind given the world in which we live? So these seven seals are discussed in Revelation 6 through 8. And I hope you understand that he's looking at an old book that would be a scroll. And what has happened is that the scroll has been wrapped up so far, then sealed with a clay seal, wrapped up a little further, sealed again. And this has been done 7 times. So if we want to see what is in the scroll, we have to break the first seal, unroll it, read what is there, break the next seal, unroll it a little further, the next seal, unroll it a little further, and then we can read what is in the scroll. So you will remember that there was a call made through earth and heaven to see who would be worthy to break these seals and divulge the prophecies that were on this scroll, and none were found to be worthy except the Lamb of God, Jesus Christ. So then we have the breaking of the seals. Now the first 4 seals are about 4 horsemen. And everybody knows about this. The first seal is a white horse with a rider. The next seal is a red horse with a rider. The third seal is a black horse with a rider. And the fourth seal is a pale horse, and that means a green horse, with a rider. So everybody knows about these first 4 seals, and I assume that everybody knows that under the 7th seal, we have the dispensing of 7 trumpets. The 7 trumpets are contained inside the 7th seal. And so then the trumpets are blown one by one. And we all know what happens on the 7th trump, the last trump. We're told in Revelation 10 what happens when that trump sounds. There an angel swears that time shall be no more. The mystery of God should be finished. And of course, Paul would talk about the last trump. Other scriptural writers talk about the last trump. Even Jesus talked about this last trumpet that shall sound, the dead shall be raised, and the world brought to an end. So these are things about the seals that you know. The question is, what do all these things represent? And I'm going to say that most of the challenge in understanding the seals is getting the first one right. The first one is the hard one. Who is this white horse and his rider? You know, if you get off on the wrong foot, it's hard to get back on the right foot. If you can get off on the right foot, then chances are pretty good that you'll be able to walk in a correct direction. And I do acknowledge that this is hard, knowing what this white horse represents. I remember years ago when studying it out, I came to the conclusion that it represents the man of sin or Antichrist. And then lately I've wondered a little more about it, and I've gone back and studied it a lot, and now I remember why I concluded that this white horse is the Antichrist or man of sin, and that's where I'm going to stand tonight. And I want to give you reasons why, and then we'll cover the other seals. Now, the first thing that we need to understand is that in the book of Revelation, we have, I'll say, 2 major blocks of prophecy. chapter 4 through 10 is a block of prophecy. Chapter 11 through 22 is another block of prophecy. You might want to consider 1 through 3 as a block, or you might just want to lump it in with the ones that's adjacent to it. Maybe you want to look at it this way. 1 through 10 is a block, and 11 through 22 is a block. These are two separate prophecies. And you'll ask, how do I know that? Well, read the final verses of chapter 10. This is what Jesus Christ said to John in the final verses of chapter 10. And I took the little book out of the angel's hand and ate it up, and it was in my mouth as sweet as honey. And as soon as I had eaten it, my belly was bitter. We'll reserve that one for another time. And he said unto me, thou must prophesy again before many peoples and nations and tongues and kings. So that tells me we've ended the first prophecy, but there is another one that is yet to come. And incidentally, we need to really absorb that statement right there. When all this happened, John had been banished to an island. It was called Patmos, out in the Mediterranean. And the one who banished him was Domitian, a Roman emperor. And some people say the reason that Domitian banished John was because John did such powerful miracles that Domitian wanted to get him out of sight and out of sound. Now, of course, there's many stories about this. They're not based on inspired text, so we can't be sure. But John got banished, and supposedly banished for a few years. He was a very old man when this happened. And when he was on this island, I'll guarantee you he was not staying in a beach house. Some say he was staying in a cave. And somewhere, divine providence manages to get him a few sheets of paper and a pen or a pencil or whatever they used in those days. And Jesus showed him this great vision. He wrote it down on the few sheets of paper that he had. And then a year or two later, when he was freed, he was able to hand that over to some Christian friend. A few years later, he died. And as of the time of his death, this book had very little circulation. And certainly at the time he was writing it, he could question whether anybody was going to read it. He's banished. But Jesus tells him, you're going to prophesy again before many nations, many kings, great multitudes of people. Well, look how things have turned out. There is no doubt Revelation is the most famous prophecy of all time. People all over the world know about it, you see. They may not agree with it. They may not understand it, but they know about it. All these things attest to the inspiration of the Bible. And, of course, here's another real funny thing. You could get out on the streets of Pearl and ask people, who was Domitian? And they'd probably say, doesn't he play for the Milwaukee Bucks? They don't know who Domitian is, but they know who the Apostle John is, don't they? Yes, they know who he is. All right, now, when we look at this second block of prophecy, and incidentally, under the first block, we have the seals and the trumpets. That's the major thing we have under the first block. Now, we get over here in this second block of prophecy, and one of the dominant themes over there is the beast. the emergence of the beast, the Antichrist. Now, in the first block of prophecy, he's not explicitly named. But I know he's got to be there. He's got to be there implicitly. And I know it for a couple of reasons. One is, the first block of prophecy goes through the seals and through the trumpets, and that carries me to the end of the world. That first block of prophecy carries you all the way to the end. The second block of prophecy carries you all the way to the end. That means somewhere along the way they have to intersect. At least one point they have to intersect. So even though the first block does not explicitly mention the man of sin, I know he's got to be there because of the span of time that it is contemplating. Well, here's another thing. Christians have long thought that the book here that's being unsealed is the same as the book that Daniel was told to seal. You remember Daniel chapter 12, verse 5? He wanted to know more, and God told him, seal up the book. It's to be sealed until the time of the end. So I can see why people think that the book Jesus was unsealing is the same as the book that Daniel was told to seal. But when I go over and read about what Daniel was sealing, the Antichrist or man of sin was one of the main subjects. So he's in these seals. All right, so question is this, where? Where does he show up? Where does he pop up in here? Well, in pursuit of that question, let's go through the seals in reverse order. Under the seventh seal, the seven trumpets are sounding. And every time one of them sounds, God is bringing a terrible judgment on this earth, terrible destruction. Oh, I'm kind of hoping we'll be out of here before that happens. Terrible destruction. And those trumpets, I think are blown in pretty quick sequence. And, of course, you know what happens on the last one. All right, now, I would think that the man of sin was already here by then. He's already here as of the seventh seal, for sure. All right, and we back up to the sixth seal. What's going on in the sixth seal? Under the sixth seal, the wicked men of this earth are acknowledging their doom and they are bewailing it. They know the wrath of God is about to come on them. So these men are not under the delusions of the beast. They have come to realize that they were under the delusions, but they're under no delusions anymore. So as of the sixth seal, this beast figure must already be here. All right, now we back up to the fifth seal. Under the fifth seal, the redeemed in heaven are crying unto God, O Lord, holy and true, how long dost thou wait to avenge our blood on them that dwell on the earth? I mean, the redeemed in heaven are calling upon God to put things to an end down here. And then, of course, the Lord tells them it'll be but a short time. And I want you to think about the implications of that verse. A lot of times people ask me, when we get to heaven, will we know who we are? Will we know each other? Will we remember anything? Will we remember where we came from? And some people will be bold enough to say, oh, no, we won't. We won't remember anything, all that stuff. Well, look at these people. They remember they came from earth. They remember that they were persecuted on this earth. They know their loved ones are still down there on that earth. They know their loved ones are still being persecuted, dying as martyrs on that earth. So let me tell you, when you get to heaven, you're going to know who you are and you're going to know where you came from. How could you sing, for thou wast worthy, for thou wast slain and redeemed us by thy blood, if you didn't even remember who you were and didn't even remember that you were a sinner and didn't even remember that Jesus came in this world and died on the cross? You see how silly people can get. And by the way, I told you that when John died, this book was only in the hands of a few people. Who thinks that John is up there in heaven right now in total oblivion concerning the fact that Jesus' words were fulfilled to him and now his book has been read by people on all continents of the earth? Who thinks John is ignorant of that? He knows that. I feel confident he knows that. So anyway, we can do away with a lot of silly ideas if we just read the Bible and think about it. Fifth seal, we got the redeemed in glory, calling upon God to put an end to things down here. All right, fourth seal, we got the pale horse. So the fourth seal and fifth seal are about persecution. Now, persecution is the primary footprint of the man of sin. So we got him here. He's here by then. All right, we back up a little more. Third seal is about food shortages, if I understand it correctly. Measure of wheat for a penny, three measures of barley for a penny. See that thou hurt not the oil and the wine. Second seal is about war, and usually one follows upon the other. People get to fight wars and burn down fields and things like this, so next thing you know, you got shortages. All right, now you may ask, well, what would that have to do with the man of sin? Well, go over to Isaiah 14 and read what Isaiah said about him. Isaiah said when he'd be going down into hell, all the kings of the earth who were already down there would narrowly look on him and say, have you become weak like us, you know? Why, you were the man that destroyed cities and turned the world into a wilderness, you see. Didn't let your prisoners out of jail. All this is showing me that he has a very destructive effect on the world. And when I read about the second seal and the third seal, we have a world that has endured much destruction. So it looks to me like he's there. And so I've been tracking his footprints all the way through these seals from the 7th to the 6th to the 5th to the 4th to the 3rd to the 2nd, kaboom, to the 1st. I think he is that white horse. All right, now, somebody may say, wasn't Jesus or won't Jesus ride a white horse? Revelation chapter 19, well, yes, he will, but there's going to be a lot of difference between what you read about Revelation 19 and what you're going to read about in this white horse of Revelation 6. But before we get on that, I want to show you other places where John talks about Jesus in the book of Revelation. I mean, every time Jesus comes up, you know he's talking about Jesus. I mean, exclamatory praise. Usually for him saving his people. Everywhere you read about it. All right, so I'm going to go over them right fast. I'm going to go over other places where he talks about Jesus. All right, now, let's look at what he says to the seven churches back in chapters 1 through 3. Christ is portrayed as holding the seven stars. He walks in the midst of the seven golden candlesticks. He is the first and he is the last. He was once dead and is alive. He bears the two-edged sword of God's word. He has the piercing eyes of fire and the brazen feet that have endured tribulation. These are all characterizations that John gives of him. He has the seven spirits of God. He is holy and true. He holds the key of David. He is the faithful and true witness. He is the beginning of the creation of God. Now we move past those seven churches. Same thing continues. In chapter 5, he is the Lamb that was slain, who only is worthy to open the seals of the book, because he had redeemed a great multitude by his blood. Chapter 6, great multitudes in heaven attribute salvation to him as the Lamb. Chapter 11, he's the God of the whole earth and the Christ, unto whom the kingdoms of the world are given forever. You see how plain, how overt, how exclamatory, how glorious Jesus is presented. More. Chapter 12, he's the promised child that is caught up to God and to his throne, and who will rule the nations with a rod of iron. Chapter 14, he's the Lamb in the midst of Mount Zion, who is adored by the 144,000. He is also the one riding upon a cloud and wearing a golden crown and holding a sharp sickle whereby he harvests the earth. Chapter 16, he is praised as great, marvelous, just, and true. Chapter 17, he is again the Lamb, who also is the Lord of lords and King of kings. And chapter 19, he is the faithful and true husband to his bride. And he wears many crowns, and he wages war, but in righteousness. Chapter 20, he gloriously reigns with his saints for 1,000 years. In chapter 21, he's the Alpha and the Omega, who freely gives to all that are athirst. He is also the very temple of the heavenly city. And then in chapter 22, the last chapter, he's the Lamb who shares the throne of God, and whose reward is in his hand. John can't speak of Jesus Christ without just inundating him with praise, adoration, things like this. We've got little, if any, of that on this white horse. And that, I think, is very telling about who this white horse is. All right, now this rider on this horse, he has a bow. Do you remember any verse in the Bible that associates Jesus with a bow? No, it's with a sword. He has a sword. And you know, being an old hard shell, with all my primitive Baptist prejudices, I like that, because a bow is a far-off weapon. But a sword is an up-close weapon. And you know, we believe in an up-close Savior, don't we? We believe in an up-close Savior. We believe in immediate regeneration, things like this. Over in Revelation 19, when he appears on the white horse, he has a sword. He has many crowns. This rider we're talking about in Revelation Chapter 6, he's only got one crown. Those people who followed him, the great armies that follow him in Revelation 19, it said their garments were white and clean. Well, I don't remember hearing the word clean with reference to the white horse of the first seal. And then I want you to consider this, that from this point onward in the book of Revelation, the devil is going to be portrayed as playing a game of imitating Christ. I mean, whatever God's doing, whatever Jesus is doing, he's imitating it. You see? God has a trinity. The devil, he unfolds himself in a trinity. The false prophet, the beast, the dragon. God has a son. Devil comes up with a son. Son of perdition. God's son is accompanied by a prophet, John the Baptist. The devil, he comes up with a false prophet to accompany his son. God's Son is accompanied by apostles who will one day be enthroned. So the devil's son, he's accompanied by 10 kings, you see. God's got a bride, the New Jerusalem. The devil's got a bride, the Babylonian harlot, you see. God's got a city, the devil's got a city. It's just a game of, God's got a resurrection. The devil comes up with a resurrection. The old mortally wounded head on the beast, all the world marveled at it, that it lived. I'm not saying he actually resurrected it, but he convinced people that he did, you see. And this white horse we're reading about here, to me, is part of the game of imitation. And he is likely a harbinger of things to come. This is where the imitation game gets started. So now we can work through these seals and see what they are. I believe the white horse is the emergence of the man of sin. The red horse says after him there'll be wars. The black horse says that after these wars, there'll be shortages. Now, the rider on this horse says a measure of wheat for a penny, 3 measures of barley for a penny, and see that thou hurt not the oil and the wine. In Bible times, a penny was a day's wage. You remember that the laborers, in the parable of the laborers, they freely agreed to work for a penny a day. That was before Joe Biden ran the inflation rate up. A measure of wheat would be about how much wheat you would need to sustain yourself. So what he's saying there, a day's work gets you a day food. You know, no more Buicks and no more condominiums, things like this. You're having to work just enough to keep yourself alive. Barley, an inferior grain to humans, usually is much cheaper than wheat, but still it's expensive here. We'll talk for a moment about the oil and the wine. But we get to this third horse. We have rationing, we have shortages, and then we get to this pale horse, and we got persecution. All right, now, I want you to listen to the opening verses of what Jesus said in his Olivet Discourse. This is Matthew 24. Now remember how we've run through these first 4 seals. False Christ, wars, famine, or food shortage, then persecution. Now listen, and Jesus answered and said unto them, take heed that no man deceive you. For many shall come in my name, saying, I am Christ, and shall deceive many. False Christ. First warning. And ye shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that ye be not troubled, for all these things must come to pass, but the end is not by and by. Next thing he mentions, wars. Red horse. For nation shall rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines and pestilences. All right, next thing he mentions, famines. And earthquakes in divers places. Now he mentions pestilences, that would be diseases. And boy, howdy, we've seen some of that, haven't we? And now that carries me back to the oil and wine. This is not a sure thing, but we know in the Bible those were used as medicines. The Good Samaritan, he anointed the man's wounds with oil and wine. Paul told Timothy, take a little wine for thy stomach's sake. So he could be saying, don't be wasting the oil and the wine because we need the medicine. And now look at the last thing Jesus says, and we're in Matthew 24, verse 4. Then shall they deliver you up to be afflicted, and shall kill you, and ye shall be hated of all nations for my name's sake. Jesus went right through the same order that I went through on those horses. False Christ, war, famine, and then persecution. All right, so that's how I'm going to run the seals. And I'm sure glad it didn't stop with those horses. Sure glad it didn't stop with that. But we get down to that seventh seal. And here the redeemed in glory begin to rejoice. And by the way, under that seventh seal, those angels that have got the trumpets and they're ready to start blowing and oh, hell's going to break loose. One of them says, hurt not the earth until we have sealed the servants of our God in their forehead. There's going to be a deliverance for some of God's children in those days. And I don't think I would be scared even if there weren't, but I'm comforted by the fact that there is. Now, I'd like to talk more about this, but our time is up, and hopefully these things have been beneficial to you. Now, let's sing one verse during which those of you who have not been baptized, not been united with the church, need to step forward, and we will sing for our